Monday the 7th of June, Kof Hei Sivan, Rabbi Yehoshua Kol, The Snake, The Spies, and A Very Strange Tree.
Good morning. It's a tremendous cover to be included in the list of speakers that are zeich to be a part of this fantastic program. I apologize for not speaking in the Safa Medinas, I guess, the traditional language. I will also apologize that I'm going to go back in time and speak on Parsha Shlach Hashtekel. I believe the Yisoid is a Yisoid that's nogeya to, it's relevant to us in every aspect of our lives, but originally I was intended to speak, I believe, on Friday morning, so I had intended a particular shiur, and as such my travel plans changed, and I ended up coming first on Friday, and so here I am. But I think that again, pardon me? Right. I believe the Yisoid is a Yisoid that can carry us through not just Parsha Shlach, but through many, many Parshas and many aspects of our life. When we look at the Meraglim, there's a very obvious question that we need to ask, and that is that as bad as what the Meraglim did was, it goes without saying that it wasn't a good thing, and it was a destructive thing, and it was... But on the scale of the chatayim that went on in the Midbar, on the scale of things that went on, the rebellions against the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Chet HaEgel, it doesn't seem to be that which the Meraglim did was so incredibly horrific. Spoke Lashon Hara in Eretz Yisrael, didn't trust the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Good, I understand. I remember many years ago, in Yishmuz, a particular issue that was going on in Eretz Yisrael at the time, Shlomo Volman, Zichrono Livracha, was very, very upset about the way that the matzah was being dealt with. He pointed out that, at the end of the day, the chait of the Meraglim was the chait of Lashon Hara. These other things as well, but... He was speaking about the chaymer of the Isser of Lashon Hara, that you see that Klal Yisrael was Eved Zara by the Chet HaEgel, and a small chelik of Klal Yisrael was killed. And there was a smaller punishment. Lashon Hara, and the Gansadar, the entire generation had to be wiped out. Good, we could schmooze about the chaymer of Lashon Hara, the severity of Lashon Hara. But I believe that if we take a look through the history of Klal Yisrael, that there is a pattern that we see that's reflected in what happened with Meraglim. Klal Yisrael was aimed to go into Eretz Yisrael. They were ready to go into Eretz Yisrael to reach the hashlama, the tachlis of their raison d'etre, so to speak, of everything that they had come out of Mitzrayim to do. They were, so to speak, they had reached the goal line. And at the very last moment, there was a failure that prevented them from going in. And I think that pattern repeats itself. Klal Yisrael sees the Torah, Matan Torah, at Har Sinai, and they're intended to hold on, they're intended to finish everything, the Beis HaMikdash could be, go to Eretz Yisrael, b'chulei b'chulei, but they fail. Even if we go back, Shlomo Melech, the Yom Shabbat Beis HaMikdash, the day that Shlomo Melech built the Beis HaMikdash, was Nosavas Parai, right? He was almost there. Klal Yisrael reached the pinnacle of its state of being. Again, a failure. And again, if we go back to Bria Sa'ilam, the same thing. We look at the beginning of Chet, so to speak. Adam and Chava were intended to come into existence on Yom Shishi, on the sixth day, and be nichnas into Shabbos. And had they been nichnas into Shabbos, the entire tachlis of the Bria, the entire purpose of everything for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shamayim Va'aretz, that there be an entity, there be a Bria that's outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that can be Omed B'Nisayon, that can be Omed in that test of not being Chayta, the entire tachlis of the Bria would have been completed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have been nice and schar, he could have given the reward that he intended to, and everything would have been done. But again, fell short. So what is this pattern? What's the idea? What is going on? So intuitively we understand, I believe, that the shirish of chait lies in the chait of the Eitz Hadas. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Sukkim the Stama that we don't need to be reminded of. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim ala Adam leimor mikol Eitz Hagan achol tochel. Kadosh Baruch Hu was metzave Adam saying, from all the trees of the garden you must eat. Don't eat from the Eitz Hadas Tevera, ki b'yayim echolcha mimenu mostamos. So the day you eat from it, you're going to die. Now, it's a strange warning. We believe that when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says something, Kadosh Baruch Hu means what he says. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, ki b'yayim echolcha mimenu mostamos. The day you eat from it, you're going to die. Now we know the rest of the story. The rest of the story is they ate from the tree and they didn't die. They didn't die. They hid. They got dressed. Kadosh Baruch Hu came looking for them. We know the story. So say that brought Misa into the world, that at the end of 1,000 years, Adam was going to die. 970 years, whatever, 930 years. That's not what it says. It says, "Bayayim acholcha mimenu mostamos." So what's going on? What was that chait? What was exactly wrong? Okay, we could ask the question in a slightly different way. What did Kadosh Baruch Hu have wrong with das? What was the big deal with das? Such a bad thing to know? We're the people of the book. That's one of the people of the book. We believe in knowledge. We believe in being an intelligent, educated people. Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't want Adam and Chava to be so knowledgeable. Don't know too much. The emesis that there's a Rashi earlier in Bereishis that I think gives us a clue that opens the door to the fact that this chait, the chait of the Eitz Hadas, didn't exist, so to speak, in a vacuum. That it had its origins in, so to speak, an earlier chait. What do I mean? That which is known, that which is spoken about in the language of what's called chait ha'aretz. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer Elokim Tadshe Ha'aretz Desha Esav Mazriya Zera Eitz Pri Eisav Pri V'minai Asher Zarei Baya La'aretz Vayichem. Kadosh Baruch Hu's Metzave Tadshe Ha'aretz Desha Esav, the grass is Mazriya Zera Eitz Pri Eisav Pri. Language that we've heard before, a fruit tree that makes fruit. Asher Zarei Baya V'taytze Ha'aretz, and the earth brought forth Desha Esav Mazriya Zera L'mineyu. The Eitz Oisapri. And what did the earth bring forth? Not an Eitz Pri Oisapri, but an Eitz Oisapri, a tree that makes fruit. So Chayra, just without even being Ma'ayan into anything, Chayra, we see that there's something going on over here. That the world, that the earth didn't bring forth exactly what the Rebbeinu Shlom wanted. Kadosh Baruch Hu's Mitzvah that there'd be an Eitz Pri Oisapri. And the earth brought forth an Eitz Oisapri. Rashi explains, what is what's the difference between an Eitz Pri Oisapri and an Eitz Oisapri? Again, things that we've heard before, Mustama. Eitz Pri, says Rashi, Shiehei Tamap Eitz Katama Pri. What did a Kadosh Baruch Hu want? Eitz Pri Oisapri, a fruit tree that made fruit. Shiehei Tamap Eitz Katama Pri. The tree itself tastes exactly like the fruit. That if one were to go up to the bark or the trunk of an apple tree and take a bite out of the trunk of an apple tree or tear some bark off and eat the bark of an apple tree, it would taste like an apple. Shiatama eats katama pri. The tree itself, the cheft of the tree, should taste like the fruit. Says Rashi, v'hi lo asasakim. The earth did not do that. The earth didn't produce what a Kadosh Baruch Hu had commanded. El v'taytze ha'aretz v'gaymer v'eitz oisapri. The earth produced an eitz oisapri, a tree that produced fruit. But in that which the earth produced, the eitz was not a pri. The eitz, the tree itself, did not taste like fruit. Lefikach. Now that's fine. Good, that we've heard. Now Rashi says something unbelievably that it's very difficult to understand. Lefikach, says Rashi, kishin iskalel adam alavaynai nifka degam hi alavayna. Rashi says, therefore, when Adam Arishon is chayta with the eitz hadas, so the earth gets nichol in that punishment and gets punished along with him. What does that have to do? If the earth was chayta, whatever it means, which is beyond the purview of our discussion today, whatever it means that the earth was chayta, that the earth brought forth something different than a Kadosh Baruch Hu had been metzaveh, whatever that means, if the earth was chayta, so the earth should get punished. If it's not shayach for the earth to be chayta, because the earth doesn't have bechira, because the earth is not a ben adam that has bechira, it's not shayach for the earth to be chayta, so the earth shouldn't be punished. But Mamanashah, why should the earth be punished when Adam Arishan is chayta? What does the chayta of Adam Arishan have to do with the chayta of this chayta of the Aretz? Seems that there's a chayt, because it says Vihilei also Sachayim, they didn't, it was some kind of act of bechira. Seems that there's a chayt because there's a punishment that comes, but even though it comes later. But what does the punishment of the earth have to do with the punishment of Adam Arishan? So to understand this, I think we have to understand exactly what is going on with this idea. What is this meaning of this cheta aret? What is the idea that the earth was sin, and what is this sin? We understand that the Rebbeinu Shlomo is not teaching us a horticultural lesson in the development of trees. That there's this idea of the fact that the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted there to be an eitz pri eisav pri, a fruit tree that created fruit, and the earth brought forth a tree that created fruit, that there must be some fundamentally philosophical message. We're dealing here with the shayrashim of the Bria. We're dealing with the roots of everything that came into creation. We, without even knowing anything, we can intuit the fact that there's something sublimely deep about the fact that there was a chet in the Aretz itself, built into the Surah Sa'aretz in some way. That there's chet built in. We can understand it without it being Mayan. Rav Dessler has an unbelievably powerful insight into the chet Aretz. And he says as follows. There are two stages in the development of anything. There's what we can call the process of development, and then there's the product itself, that which is produced. There's the mechanisms by which the product comes into existence, that's the product, the process, and then there's the fruit that comes out of it. The relationship between those two stages, between the stage called process, the stage of development of creation, and the stage called product, that which comes out, that relationship varies. What is it determined by? How does it vary? It depends how dedicated the process is to the singular development of that product. The dogma. A number of years ago, I lived in California. Not far from where I lived in California, there was a fruit juice production plant. An apple juice production plant. Heavy Eimer, one could say, that production plant was an apple juice production plant. Why? It produced apple juice. So there's a synergy between the process, the fact that it's a plant which produces apple juice, and the product which is the apple juice. And in the process itself, because it produces apple juice, so that plant, the process is called is apple juice. The process is an apple juice production. But there was a problem with that plant. What was the problem with that plant? They happened to also produce clam juice on the same production line. Clam juice.
What's clam?
Clam juice is juice made from clams. It's not it was not a kosher. That was how it came to my attention, because it was a shy little kashrus. Shellfish. Yes, believe it or not, people actually drink that. Don't explain. Certain things I can't explain. Chita aretz, I'll try to explain. Why people drink clam juice? You gotta ask someone else that question. Now, once we see that plant produces other things, the process is engaged in other activities, we can no longer define the process by that singular product called apple juice. Because the process is now autonomous to the product. The process produces lots of things. The process has many different agendas. It's an individual autonomous entity. And it produces lots of things. And it's not defined solely by the product. Explains Rav Dessler. There's process, and then there's production. The process is the tree. The tree is the process, the mechanism by which the fruit comes into existence. The product is the fruit. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Tad she ha'aretz tesha esev mazriya zera, ve'etz pri oise pri. What did the Kadosh Baruch Hu want in the Bria? What was the Kadosh Baruch Hu's vision in the Bria? That there be a singularity of mission, there be a complete conviction, a complete absorption in producing that which was the intention to produce. That the entire Tachlis HaChayim of the Bria be completely subsumed in producing that which was created to produce, such that you don't see a difference between the process and the product. Whatever that Tachlis of the Bria was, if the process, the entire process of that which goes into existence is subsumed, is dedicated, is committed to producing that end result, that's an Eitz Pri Oise Pri. There's no autonomy in the Bria. There would be no autonomy. There would be no unique, no individuality in the Bria. The entire Bria would be consumed and solely and wholly dedicated to the fulfillment of that tachlis for which it was created. And as such, you would see an Eitz Pri Oise Pri, Tama Eitz Ketama Pri. You would taste the product in the process itself. V'hilai also sachay. The earth didn't produce that. Again, whatever that means, that the earth didn't produce that. As Rachayim HaKadosh explains, that there was a deep in Lashon. Kadosh Baruch Hu really laid the seeds for this. Excuse the pun. Laid the seeds for this chait himself, kiviyachol. However it works, that the arts didn't produce that. The arts produced a tree which tastes different than the fruit. A tree which tastes, has its own taste. Maybe it doesn't have any taste. But it certainly doesn't taste like the fruit. The process is no longer solely dedicated to the creation of that product. The process is now independent. The process is now its own entity. The product might get produced, but it's not the sole definition of the process. So why is the earth only punished when, what's the connection between that chait and the chait of Adam HaRishon? Why is that the chait of Adam HaRishon? Oh. Because I think we read the psukim incorrectly. And agav, I think it's a mistake we make in a hashkafas achayim as well. The pasuk says, pasuk tazayin, perek beis, pasuk tazayin, beitzav Hashem lekim ala adam leimor mikol eitz hagan achol tochel. And how do we translate that? Conventionally, we translate it, and you can eat from all the trees of the garden. They're all available for you to eat. It's not what the pasuk says. Pasuk doesn't say you can eat from every tree of the garden. The pasuk says mikol eitz hagan achol teichel. When you double a verb in Hebrew, what you do is you make it what's called an imperative. In English, I think in your English, I think you would say verily you must eat. Forsooth, thank you. In my English, would say you've got to eat. There was not one sivoy in Gan Eden. There were two tzivuyim in Gan Eden. Mikol eitz hagan achol tochel, or at least it was a two-sided tzivuy. Mikol eitz hagan achol tochel. You must eat from every tree of the garden. But this tree, don't eat from it. Agav, I think that misunderstanding has ripple effects in our lives. We spend a lot more time telling our children all the things that they can't do than we do telling our children all the things that they have the opportunity to do. All the things that they must do. All the wonderful fruits of our existence that they must eat from to experience and to enjoy and to relish and to savor. And we focus on the fact that they can't do this, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. I got one. What's the outgrowth of this two-sided tzivui, now that we have this new understanding? What does it look like to be living at that moment? Be living at that moment in Gan Eden. Mikol eitz hagan achol teichel, umi eitz hadas teivar alo yisaychal mimenu. If I'm mitzuveh to eat every fruit of the garden, the kiwis and the kumquats and the mangoes and the watermelons, everything, just don't eat this one fruit. So what does that look like on the ground? I eat an apple, filling a tzivur Hashem. An orange, tzivur Hashem. A watermelon, a cantaloupe, everything, I'm fulfilling a tzivur Hashem. Everything I do is defined by fulfilling a tzivur Hashem. There's nothing that I do that's not fulfilling a tzivur Hashem. I eat anything that's there. I'm fulfilling a tzivur Hashem. Everything's a tzivur. If I don't eat from the Eitz Hadas Tevara, I'm fulfilling the Tzivui Hashem. Oh. And now we come to the key and the core question. Adam was created with a self. Adam was created with Bechira. Adam was created with as an autonomous being. He was created as a Bria. Lashon Bar, Maral and others say, outside, something separate. He was created as an independent being. For many reasons. Such as the Kadosh Baruch Hu could be a Noisen. So we have Bechira. Many different reasons. But L'maisa Adam HaRishon was created as a Bria outside of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And now comes the key question. What does it mean to be independent? What does it mean to be a self? If my entire life is subsumed, if my entire life is absorbed in simply doing what I was mitzvah to do, everything I do, I can't move without fulfilling a tzivui. So where's my self? Where's my independence? Where's my autonomy? Where's my eitz oisapri? Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world. The entire existence is defined by the fulfillment of the Tzivui Hashem. No independence, no autonomy. Complete dedication, complete commitment. Eitz Pri Eitz Pri. V'hi lo yasas achein. And Adam HaRishon said, if all I do is fulfill tzivui after tzivui after tzivui, where's me? I'm just an eitz pri eitz pri. I'm just the pri. Where's me as that separate entity, that autonomous, that bria, that bar that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created? There's only one thing Adam HaRishon can do. Only one thing he can do to define himself as different, as separate, as autonomous, as independent. And that's to be chayta. And that's chet. Chet is the challenge that we face to allow ourselves to be an eitz pri oisa pri. I'll share with you a verse that Bez Hashem maybe you'll come back to in a number of months. But I think it reflects this concept. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tkiyas Shofar, "Afal pi shetkiyas shofar chayk, remez yeshba, uri yishena mishinaschem." Famous Rambam. So I was once bothered by a very obvious question: when is the Rambam talking about that remez? At what point in the calendar does that remez become nageya? So we all say the drasha is for Shchedesh Elul, right? Because that's what we start playing shofar. Uri yishena mishinaschem. Beautiful. It's not what the Rambam's talking about. There's no chayk to blow shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul. The only chayk of blowing shofar is Rosh Hashanah. That's when there's a tzivah to blow shofar. There's many to blow shofar, doing else very nice. But the Rambam is not talking about that. The Rambam is talking about Rosh Hashanah. So who's the Shiur Yishenei Mishraschem? When's he talking about? He's talking about Musaf Rosh Hashanah? When's Elul Kula? I mean, you missed Elul, you missed Slichas, you missed Marav Rosh Hashanah, Shachris Rosh Hashanah. If you're that asleep that you're finally waking up when Musaf Rosh Hashanah, I don't know how much hope there is. That's the guy. then make the chayk. Rav Shmuel should have made the chayk earlier on. Wake up, start waking up. My alarm clock goes off at a good hour before I need to get up so I can hit my snooze alarm over and over again. I think the Rambam means something different. The Rambam's not talking to someone who's in Gan Sefer Shulchan. He's not talking to someone who's completely asleep. The Rambam's talking to someone who's been trying to wake up all month. Someone who's been working and going to Shirin and being Zchazik and going to Slichas and getting up earlier, staying up late, and they daven last night, and they're really, really trying to get there. And you know what? It's easy. A person is willing to do everything to give almost their entire self over to Avodas Hashem. They're willing to do it all on one condition, that they can retain just a little bit for themselves. They can hold just a little bit back. They can hold on to just a little bit that they don't have to give over. There can be a little bit that they can just keep inside of themselves. They can leave asleep. Just that one part of it. Maybe I'll wake up my whole thing, but maybe just a little bit I'll keep asleep. Comes the Rambam to say, that's what Tekiah Shofar comes to. Only Tekiah Shofar can wake up that depth of who we are. That deep part in ourselves that we just want to keep asleep. Deep down, like L'mashal Yonah, the bottom of the ship. That little part of us that want to keep asleep, that the Tekiah Shofar can get deep down inside of ourselves, deep, deep inside, and wake up that part of ourselves. That's the Uri Shenim Shudasim, that part of you that's still asleep after Elul, after Rosh Hashanah. That's the chet of the Eitz Hadas. That challenge. Am I willing to allow myself to wholly begin to give it over? Am I allow myself to let go completely of that deepest part of myself that I was created with? This didn't start with Adam Rishon. This was built into the Bria, this challenge, so to speak. It's Priya Sapri, Eitz Sapri. This was a challenge which is inherent in the Teva of the Bria. And this is the challenge that Klal Yisrael faces throughout its history. As a Klal, are they willing to let go completely? Are they willing at the finish line, at that last moment, where they can finally get across the finish line and fulfill that which they came into existence to do? Can they let go? They let go and allow themselves to completely be absorbed in that tachlis of the Bria. And the truth of the matter is, this challenge we face every day of our lives. This challenge defines how we deal with the most profound relationships that we have in our lives. It's not just a theoretical vart in Gan Eden, Meraglim, Chet Ego. This is a question of how we relate to our children. It's a question of how we relate to our spouses. To what extent are we willing to open ourselves up and allow ourselves to be given over to that relationship wholly and completely? And to what extent do we have to hold back just a little bit? Keep a little bit private for ourselves. So we don't let ourselves go completely. We don't let ourselves get too swallowed up in that relationship. And ultimately, this defines the challenges that we face every single day. Think if we were to take an honest look at the nisyonos that we face in any chet. Chatayim kalim, light, small chatayim. Chatayim gedolim, rachmanu litzlan. The shayrish of that chet is, how much do I need to keep for myself? How much do I have to keep hidden inside of me that I can't let out, that I can't let go, that I can't give over? Hashem Baruch Hu should give us all the schus that b'chlal u'befrat, as a Klal Yisrael and as individuals, that we develop the strength. We develop the conviction, develop the love that is required to become those people that we were created in order to be able to become, and that one day we are able to stand again as a klal and as individuals and proudly proclaim ourselves as Eitz Pri Oisa Pri, fruit trees that produce the fruit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us to produce.